Well, hello, Broadway. I'm Wendell. I'm your Pathway minister. We're a ministry of hope and healing. We meet on Sunday nights, 5 o'clock for food and fellowship, and 6 o'clock for our celebration service. We meet here on the Melrose campus in the Cup. You're more than welcome to come. Warning, we're a bunch of crazies. You never know what you might get, but it's a lot of fun, and you just bring the living room version of yourself. So we'd love to see you. Here we are in this series on Jesus' final words, and they're all out of the Gospel of John. And so we find the passage you heard this morning was out of the first part of chapter 14. Let not your hearts be troubled. I go to prepare a place for you so that you could be with me, and so on and so forth. But before we dig into this, I think it's good for us to backtrack maybe a couple verses. Of course, John didn't write in verses and chapters. He just wrote. We separated it up for our convenience. But if you go back just a few steps, Jesus has been talking about his final days and about his execution and about his arrest and execution and all that. So that's everybody's on edge. You can sense something in the air. They're gathered together. It's kind of foreboding. And so he looks at Judas, and he knew this long before, but this was the time to say it. So he says it in the hearing of all his posse, "You're going to betray me. You're going to become a turncoat." Peter might have puffed up a little bit in arrogance over that. Don't know. He's prone to do that kind of thing. So Jesus turns to him and said, "Dude, by the way, you're going to deny me." Push back. "No, you're going to deny me." And so that ends up chapter 13, and now we're in chapter 14. And that's when Jesus said, don't let your hearts be troubled, because I'm going to prepare a place for you so that where I am, you can be as well. And so Thomas speaks up. Isn't it interesting that John names all these? He's named Judas, and now he's named Peter, and now he's named Thomas. Thomas, the one who wanted to see the scars after the resurrection, he says, but we don't know how to get to where you're going. You're going to somewhere to prepare. How do we get there? So it's like, I need something tangible. I need something rational, real, that I can sense, that I can see, touch, feel, whatever. I need this. And Jesus said, I'm the way. And we'll look into that in a few minutes. You don't need a map. You got me. And so then Philip speaks up. And Philip says, well, can you show us the Father? So he's saying we need some kind of divine sign off on this. We need some kind of sign, some kind of wonder, so that we'll know that all this stuff that's going on, the bombs you've dropped, what you say is going to happen. We need to know that this is, it sounds crazy. We need some sort of sign and wonder to let us know. So Jesus said, I've already given you a bunch of signs and wonders. And he said, if you want to see the Father, you've already seen me. So we're going to dig into that in a minute. So I think what we need to do, first of all, is to say it's very unique that John picked a full third of the posse. There's 12 of them. He names four, and he articulates their issues. All four of them, he articulates them. And so we want to break that down just a minute before we get into Jesus' response, how he is a good shepherd to them, which, by the way, John is the only gospel that ever includes the story of Jesus calling himself the good shepherd. So we're going to see the good shepherd in action in a minute. But first, let's see the wounded sheep. And the first wounded sheep would be Judas. And Judas had in his mind a certain belief, a certain, I don't know if you'd call it a doctrine, but he had a certain anticipation, expectation, belief of what a Messiah should look like and what a Messiah should do. And when you get to the end of the story here, and Jesus says, I'm going to be arrested, I'm going to be executed, everything inside Judas' head short-circuited. This goes completely contrary to what I believe a good Messiah should do. A good Messiah should get Rome off our backs and should reinstate us as a superpower like we were under David. That's what a good Messiah should do. Come in on a steed with a sword and a bunch of angels. That's what a good Messiah should do. So basically what Judas did is he said, I'm choosing to go with what I believe instead of the real Messiah who's standing right in front of me, the person of Jesus Christ. I'm going to go with my beliefs over the person of Jesus. Stop and think about that. How many people have such strong beliefs that Jesus, literally the presence of God, could be right in front of them, and they refuse to acknowledge it or go with it, sense the movement of God because it goes contrary to what they believe or want to believe or must believe in their mind. This is widespread. And then you have Peter, who's just basically scared to death. And so he, all he cares about is self-preservation and safety. He doesn't know it. And he covers it up with bravado. I'll walk on the water. I'll whack the guy's ear off with a sword. I know you're the Messiah. I mean, you could cite all these examples of Peter and his bravado. I've got this. I'm okay. And Jesus saw right through that and saw the little scared boy inside of him. He saw the potential of the rock, but he also saw the little boy inside of him. And he said, dude, you're going to deny me. Out of fear of being found out of fear of being associated with me, whatever, you're going to deny me. So Peter chose safety in his denial. Peter chose safety over the person of Jesus. Think about that in your own personal life. I think about myself. I don't really think you've got this, Jesus. I've got to take care of it myself. My whole agenda right now is to be safe and comfortable, not you. So I go into self-protection mode and completely miss out on the person of Jesus who's right there with me. Who of us haven't been there? My gracious, through this pandemic, through the war in Ukraine, through all this stuff that happens, you know, we choose safety and self-preservation. And Jesus says, I'm right here. Choose me. But Peter chose safety. And then you come up with Thomas, and he says, this has got to make sense to me. I'm not buying it until it makes sense. If you lay it out in black and white, I'll go your direction. If you let me see the scars and touch and feel, I'll go your direction. Otherwise, I'm not budging. This has got to make sense to me. And he's standing right in front of the Messiah. He's standing right in front of the same Jesus he'd been with for 3 years, who had handed him bread and fish and said, take this out. And felt it multiply. He'd gone out two by two and cast out demons and preached the gospel and seen people changed. And yet he's still stuck with, this has got to make sense to me. Otherwise, I'm not budging. So he chose rational explanation over, and there's nothing wrong with that, but he chose that over the person of Jesus. Jesus right there in front of him, and he chose this option over Jesus. And then you see Philip, who says, I want to smell a pillar of smoke and fire when I throw back the tent flap in the morning. I want manna on the ground. I want a fleece that's wet one morning and dry the next morning. I want some sort of sign to let me know that this is divinely ordained. So he picked signs and wonders, shock and awe, over the person of Jesus. Sounds like what I just said is an indictment of all four of these guys. And most of us would look at that and say, well, shame on them. They'd been with Jesus 3 years, and they're still stuck on these things. You know, a certain set of beliefs, a certain feeling of, I want to be safe and secure. It's got to make sense to me. It's got to be accompanied by a sign or a wonder. Jesus, he doesn't even get close to indicting them. He doesn't criticize them. He doesn't judge them. The first thing he says is, I know this is troublesome to you. I know this turns your life upside down. Don't let your heart be troubled. That's the first thing he says. Don't let your heart be troubled. At the very end of the passage that was read today, he actually says, I give you peace. I give you peace. So his whole approach is not to indict, condemn, or judge, or anything like that. His first approach is to say, don't let your heart be troubled. And then the second thing he does is he says, I'm with you always. Literally, he told them, when he said, I'm going to prepare a place, this dawned on me this week. He says, guess what, guys? I'm in the future waiting for you to show up. I'm already there. That's how secure your life is with me. My presence is guaranteed in the future when you get there. And there's going to be a room with your name on it. Not only am I going to be there, but you're going to feel at home. You're going to feel comfortable. It's going to be secure. It's going to be a place you know you belong. So he gives himself in the future to them. And then to Thomas, show us the roadmap. Show us a technique, a method. Show us a strategy. And Jesus says, there is no technique or method or strategy. There's me. If you stay with me, it's like what he said about the vine and the branches. If you abide in me. So is the whole idea, like the shepherd and the sheep, if you hear my voice, follow me. So Jesus' answer to Thomas was not, I'm not here to explain everything to you and make everything make sense to you. I'm not here to outline your future for you. I'm not going to do that. But I am here to be with you. My presence is guaranteed every step you take. I think about where most of us live. I remember when my wife, first wife, was diagnosed with cancer. My strongest prayer was, God, can you at least tell me what our future holds? If she's going to die, tell me. If she's going to live, tell me. I wanted a roadmap. And how many of us, you know, this pandemic we face, this war that's in Ukraine, your job situation, your health situation, your teenage children, whatever it might be, I want a roadmap. I want something solid and rational that makes sense. And Jesus says, I'm not going to give you that, but I do give you myself. I will give you myself. He's with Peter in Peter's upheaval of emotion. He's right there with Peter. He doesn't hate Judas for what Judas is going to do. Don't let your hearts be troubled. I'm preparing a place for you. I'm here with you now. My presence is with you. It gets fuzzy because inevitably when you start talking about this, people are going to say, well, how do you know God's with you? And we do go the Thomas and the Philip route. Don't we need some sort of sign? Don't we need some kind of rational explanation? Don't we need a certain set of beliefs that we go by, that if we obey these things or believe these things, then we know God's with us? And it's, we've all been there. We've all done that. And so the last couple verses that were read this morning, in them, Jesus moves to the Comforter, the Paraclete, the one who comes alongside, our senior partner for life, the Counselor, the Advocate. It's been, the Holy Spirit's been called so many different. This word Paraclete has been translated so many different ways. But basically what Jesus is saying to his disciples is, I'm not going to leave you alone. I'm going to live with you and in you through the rest of your life, through the Spirit, who will be your senior partner in life. So life changes from us thinking that we're supposed to work for God to life becoming something we do with God, that God does with us every day. And so when we're scared to death like Peter, God's there with us. When we're struggling with our beliefs don't line up with this, that, or the other like Judas, God is with us. When we're struggling to see the future, I don't know what the future, I'm insecure about my future, I want a roadmap like Thomas does, God is with us right here in that struggle. When Philip is saying, I need a sign, I need a wonder, whatever, God says, the greatest sign you could ever have is my presence with you. The God who created the universe is right here with you now. So Jesus' last words to his disciples were not, come on, guys, you got to do better. Come on, guys, you should have gotten this by now. Guess what, guys? You're fired. I'm going to get another posse. It was none of that. Instead, it was, I give you, I want you to have peace. I want you, your hearts not to be troubled. I am with you now. I have been with you, and I will be with you. That's non-negotiable. And so I guess what I leave you with this morning is God is with you. He's not going to change your emotions. He is not going to always line up with all your beliefs. He is not going to give you a blueprint of your future. He's not going to always turn the fleece wet or dry. He's not going to do that for you. But he will be with you. That is huge. And when you settle into the presence of God, when you begin to settle into that, and you begin to own that, and you begin to marinate in it and let it saturate inside of you, at first it almost feels like a consolation prize. But I wanted a wet fleece. But I wanted a roadmap. This feels like a consolation prize. The more you settle into that, and the more you live with it day after day, I didn't get what I wanted, but I did get God. I didn't get what I expected, but I did get God. That slowly shifts, and it may shift in an instant for you. For me, it slowly shifted from a consolation prize to, hey, this is pretty good, to, wow, this is the grand prize. It'll make this shift if you allow it to. I hope this helps. I would guess that it would if you let it, because it's certainly the approach Jesus took with his disciples. So I would assume it would help all of us to hear these words. So let's talk to Jesus. Thank you, Jesus, for what you said to your guys, how you handled your guys, the approach you took with your guys. And thank you that we can assume that if we were in that same room, you would have approached us the very same way. And we kind of sense that even this morning, that you feel the same way toward us that you did those guys. We'd like to say thank you. We appreciate it. Those words aren't strong enough. But we're profoundly, profoundly grateful to have a God like you who cares for us the way you do, and that your presence is absolutely non-negotiable. Thank you so much. And we'll talk to you later. Thanks for joining us this morning. Have a great Sunday.